Welcome back to the SEC on CBS podcast here on CBS Sports. I am your host, Chip Patterson. Ben Kirchival joins me as we recap the biggest impacts from the NFL draft deadline. That's right, we have got a lot to break down, both who lost the most and who brings who back, and how does that change our look at the 2017 college football picture in the SEC and elsewhere. Make sure that you subscribe so that you can get the SEC on CBS podcast first, and enjoy draft deadline talk with Ben Kirchival. Back here on the SEC on CBS podcast, very, very excited as we sit here. It is, for 2017 at least, the inaugural podcast. Get it? Get it, Ben? Ben Kirchival joins me as we are recording here on Friday afternoon. How you doing, man?
I'm good. That's it, man. This is, it's, you're like 50-50 on like telling the inauguration joke.
I know.
Some people are gonna like it. Some people aren't.
Well, I was really just more thinking about search engine optimization. Anything we can do to be trending. That's always the goal.
Like, you want to be on Facebook, trending on Facebook by the end of the day.
Yeah, I want to use the hashtag on Twitter that gives me the presidential seal at the end, just so that we can perhaps get in the conversation for this podcast.
I was looking for Donald Trump's inauguration speech. I found two white bloggers talking about football. Like,
this is what you got.
Yeah, that's it.
All right, Ben. One of the things that is very interesting about this week, again, as we're sitting here in the middle of January, the big college football moment from this week was the NFL draft deadline. It was on Monday. Yeah. We had some last minute additions in terms of players that announced late, but really not a lot of last minute surprises, at least no big headline names. You know, you had Adoree Jackson that I think was on draft deadline day, but Ben, I mean, were you thinking that Adoree Jackson was going to be coming back to college?
No. And I probably would have taken that personally if he did.
Like, hey, dog, go. Like, go. At least go train for the Olympics. Like, go pro in something.
That's one of those, like, if you love it, set it free moments.
Yeah.
You know, just like Adoree, I love you, man, and I'm really going to miss you in college, but there's no reason for you to be here. Now, what's interesting about Adoree is, you know, and everyone kind of varies a little bit about the draft evaluations, but Matt Miller over at Bleacher Report, I mean, he says, like, from a cornerback standpoint, he would actually take him as, like, a utility guy, sort of a Tyreek Hill type of thing on offense, maybe before a cornerback, which I just thought was real interesting about that because – like, what I loved about Adoree in college, and I'm not like I'm not a scout. I mean, I couldn't tell you what makes someone like really, really great at the next level. But what I loved about Adoree was his physical gifts. Like, his closing speed was good. And I wonder if that really did, like, he kind of lacked in some of the technical stuff because he knew his natural athleticism would kill it for him. Like, that Washington game. He got burned real early on a move by, I think it was John Ross. But then he came back later and made the interception. You know why? Because he's Adoree freaking Jackson. And he's just that good.
I bump heads with NFL people.
Yeah.
I bump heads with NFL people all the time. Like, I can't stand Jabril Peppers, another player who will be leaving early. Like, I'm sorry. I think Jabril Peppers is a phenomenal athlete. And I believe that there is certain pieces of athleticism that if you overthink this, who cares what position he fits in? Like, the dude will figure it out.
Yeah.
I don't know. All right, so one of the things that we've got is players that are going to be coming back. One thing that Ben wrote for CBS Sports, some of the top players in college football that will be returning. And before we dive into some of those names, and I'm sure we'll get to them throughout the conversation of this podcast, was there anything that stood out to you? Because there were two different angles to this. Number one,
okay,
the players that are coming back. Number two, the teams that are most impacted by players leaving. Did anything that, as we were going through this week, almost like resetting the rosters, you know, we were like resetting depth charts in our brains. Any teams that stood out to you in terms of just sort of like recognizing like, oh, wow, you know, like so blank might be able to really make a move next year?
So – we lost, I think, and I think you would agree with this, we lost a lot of star power this year to the draft.
Yeah.
Now I don't know what that means in terms of, you know, where they will go in the draft, what that means for their NFL careers. I'm just saying college football lost star power, right? You lost Deshaun. You lost McCaffrey. You lost Fournette. I mean, you lost household names, a bunch of them.
Buzzy star power dudes.
Right. So you lost star power. So for me, we end up having the conversation every August. We had it last year, Chip. It's who's actually going to compete for a national title. And in any given year, there's probably 5 to 7, 8 teams who can realistically do it if the right things come together. But I think when you lose this type of star power, I think it gives a little bit of headway for maybe more than just one of those kind of non-traditional powers. Like Louisville gets Lamar Jackson back next year. Like, I think Louisville's still going to be in the conversation because of Lamar Jackson. I think Kansas State is going to hustle its way to 16-6, 10 wins, right? I mean, I think they're going to chokehold some people for a lot of wins next year. I think Penn State can pick up where it left off last year. So when you lose all of those star powers, I think it just opens that door a little bit. You get a little bit wider glimmer of light for some of those non-blue bloods to not just have dreams of making a run, but really actually making that run.
So like the Kansas State win the Big 12 with Colin Klein kind of thing.
Yeah, I think Kansas State, to me, and you know, and even it goes beyond that. I look at what Oklahoma State has coming back next year on offense.
Ooh, Mason Rudolph and James Washington, two of the biggest names. Like, and those names, are, and you know, just to your point, those aren't stars, but they are damn good football players.
Yes, they are. And now I have a little bit of recency bias in that one because I went to the Alamo Bowl. So I went and covered that. I saw it live. But what I saw against a good, but what we came to find out later was a banged up Colorado secondary, which was statistically one of the best in college football last year, which now feels weird saying that because we're just like a month removed from it. But I saw Mason Rudolph drop dimes.
Yeah.
Drop dimes to Washington, who just outruns everyone. Washington was my Big 12 Player of the Year preseason in our mag. It ended up it should have been D. Westbrook either way, but to me, I might have been a year early. I might have jumped the gun a little bit because I think James Washington can do that next year.
It's James Washington is so much fun because they line him up everywhere, and he's just a total matchup problem. All right, well, let's keep it going. So we really like Mason Rudolph. We really like James Washington. But when you look at the top, what is it going to be possible losing D.D. Westbrook, Samaje Perine, Joe Mixon? Is there a nervousness, if you are an Oklahoma fan, that Baker Mayfield will not be able to be as prolific as he was? Because Oklahoma, I mean, those early losses really impacted the way we viewed the Sooners, very obviously impacted the way that the College Football Playoff Selection Committee viewed the Sooners. I mean, 9 straight wins in Big 12 play, 9-0 record, like that's not something that has been done. They beat everyone, and they were awesome on offense, pretty bad on defense at times, but awesome on offense, one of the best offensive units in the country. You know, what is a realistic expectation for Baker Mayfield and the Sooners, particularly as we're sitting here in the Big 12 talking about an Oklahoma State team that returns Rudolph in Washington and a Kansas State team that a lot of people are feeling like is going to have one of those years where they're just a pain to play and win 10 games?
The thing that they need to find for Oklahoma is 1,000-yard back. Now, I'm not saying that running back needs to actually run for 1,000 yards. I just mean they need to find that bell cow guy, someone who's going to at least get near that total. I think they're not going to – they don't run Baker Mayfield a lot from a design standpoint. Like if he picks up yards, it's probably on a scramble. But they need that bell cow rusher because – even though they're that air raid offense, they operate best when they run the ball because then that opens up everything else for them. But if they don't have the 1,000-yard rusher outside, Jeffrey Meade was the wide receiver. Like they have Mark Andrews coming back at tight end. Like they have a big body there, and he's a tight end by title, but he's more of a wide receiver by trade.
But he's also so much better when everyone's got their eyes elsewhere.
Right. Exactly. Like so. I think Jeffrey Meade was the guy who came in at the end of the year and showed some of that flash. So I think they need that kind of outside guy. They need to have him have a breakthrough year, and I think they need to have a running back come forward and really be that guy. If they can do those two things, then Baker's going for another 4,000 because he doesn't need to spread the ball around to get those numbers. So I think he can still have a huge year, but to me, they probably – and it, you know, Oklahoma's step back, quote-unquote, is probably like 8 to 9 wins. And Bob Stoops does that once every Olympics, and right. then he picks it back up the next year. But I think if Kansas State improves, if Oklahoma State improves, if they can't find that 1,000-yard rusher, I think Oklahoma goes down to about 9 wins.
At Ohio State, we've got a very – like Ohio State on the defensive side of the ball has had 6 starting defensive backs leave early for the NFL draft in the last few years. Absolutely ridiculous. And you know what? I'm not even worried about the depth. I just assume that there's another batch of freaks that they've gone and recruited that will come right in, and then they will be another playmaking bunch that is going to be phenomenal. Now, they do get Tyquan Lewis back on the defensive line. He was the Big Ten Defensive Lineman of the Year, and most importantly, they get quarterback JT Barrett back. I'm looking at Michigan, who lost a lot of people. I'm looking at Michigan State. I'm expecting an angry season from Michigan State, but I don't know if it's going to be a win the division. And then obviously Penn State, as you mentioned earlier, you know, like if we're looking for our stars, you know, Saquon Barkley and Trace McSorley, that's got to be that Penn State Ohio State battle has to be the one that's going to be really looked at. How do you, when you're looking at the Big Ten, what stands out to you about who's coming back, who's left, and how it changes the picture?
Well, you mentioned that Ohio State, and I love Ohio State next year. And I think it was Urban who said before the season started, he goes, you know, I think we're about a year away. And it's kind of hard to put that into context because they went out and won 11 games and they went to the college football playoff. But then you saw what happened in the Fiesta Bowl where you go, all right, they went up against a more veteran team, a more talented team overall, and they got run out of the stadium. That's not what you're used to seeing out of Urban or Ohio State. I think he was right about that. I do think they, you know, their step back was still 11 wins. But I really think in terms of competing for a title, this year is the much better chance. Because you mentioned JT Barrett, which, look, he may have peaked as a redshirt freshman or not. I don't know. I just know that guy is productive as hell. And I want him leading my team. They have a great running back already established. Offensive line is going to be a year older. They need to get better. You mentioned the secondary for Ohio State losing guys, but boy, that pass rush is going to be fierce. And if you got the pass rush, that makes your secondary coverage and transition a lot easier. So I love Ohio State. Love Penn State in that offense. I think they're picking up right where they left off. So I think offense is really going to win the day in that East Division. And I think that's going to be the power division. I think you're going to be 4 deep again, even if Michigan takes a little step back. I think Michigan State is going to get better because they played a lot of young guys at the end of the year. A lot of young guys got them prepped. I do think, and boy, you don't want angry Mark D'Antonio. Like, he's already angry, but like, you don't want him to get to that next level. And I think that's what they're about to do. They're going to tick somebody off or 2 teams off on their way to about 7 wins next year. You know what I'm saying?
Nah, like I think they're gonna
upset
9.
Someone they're not supposed to.
Nah, Michigan State's gonna win 9, and no one's gonna 9? Know. I think it's a 9-3, 8-4, and no one knows how they did it. Like, they'll lose to someone they shouldn't lose to, but they're gonna be a thorn in somebody's side. D'Antonio got too much time to pour over film. I'm a D'Antonio stan. I am.
I love him. I think he's an incredible coach. The interesting thing about Michigan State is what kind of changes are they going to make? Because he opted to keep, I think, everyone on his staff. Now, D'Antonio is a loyalist. I mean, I don't know if it's to a fault, but he is a loyalist. So I'll be interested to see, you know, what they look like next year. But like we said, man, a lot of young guys coming in at the end. And I think Michigan State tried to do that thing where they're like, well, everyone, you know, you got our, you know, juniors and seniors, you know, we wanted to – get, you know, they earned their chance to play, and then they realized it wasn't working. It's like, all right, we got to give our young guys that chance. So Yeah, you might be right. I'll settle and I'll say – I'll go right in the middle. I say I think they go 8-4. I think they take off like – because, man, they've been Ohio State's kryptonite. They got them figured out. So I think they go 8-4 and they pick off like Ohio State or something.
Is there anything that stands out to you in particular about the SEC regarding the NFL draft exits or the decisions to return that have changed your mind about the pecking order in the East or the West?
I don't – maybe like in the middle at the top though. The fact that Alabama – we say Alabama – what is it, 3 players left early?
I mean, they
something
also
– like that. Like, yeah. We say – like in any year, most teams like, we had 3 people leave early for the NFL. And Alabama's like, we only had 3 people leave early for the NFL. Like, it's a completely different – narrative for the Tide. And I, you know, we talk about this list of returning players. Like you start looking at, even though they lose Jonathan Allen, like in Reuben Foster. And so you look just overall what that defense has coming back. And it's like, man, they really are going to be in it next year. I think it won't be quite the gap that we had this year, Chip, where it's Alabama and then like very clearly a gap of like a mile between the second best team. But I do think it's once again, it's going to be Alabama. But you know, man, I like Auburn. If Jarrett Stidham can come in and have an impact, I think they could really go back up on the up and up. LSU's interesting to me. If Canada comes in an offensive coordinator and has an immediate impact. So I still think it's going to be Alabama, but I think that number 2 in the West is what's real interesting to me. In the East, I don't even know, man. I really don't. I don't know what to make of that conference at all.
Really? Oh, no. See, I've got strong takes. I think that I look at everything that Florida lost.
Yeah.
I look at Florida fans are crazy, but they are not like the fact that the narrative right now is that Jim McElwain is not doing a good job on the recruiting trail is bad.
No, he's not. Yeah, he's not.
And I'm looking at Nick Chubb and Sony Michel coming back. I'm looking at Jacob Eason year 2.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? I've been thrown down the hole so many times picking Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
But as I've told you before, I've put Tennessee on a 3-year hype band. I will not pick them higher than 3rd in the SEC East for 3 years. I kind of think that of all the way that things broke with the NFL draft deadline and looking at the rosters, looking at the depth charts coming back next year, you know, it ain't going to be South Carolina. It ain't going to be Vanderbilt. You know, it's not going to be Missouri. It's not going to be Kentucky. Like, I really like Georgia's chances to get back to the SEC championship game. I mean, even, you know, we haven't had a full bit of Chubb and Michelle all healthy at the same time, all clicking at the same time. But I don't even think they need that given where the SEC East is right now.
No, and I'm praying for the day that we do get that out of the, you know, we do get the season where they're both healthy.
I mean, Chubb was a 1,000-yard rusher and he missed like almost all of 2.5 games.
Right. And then when he's out, Michelle was a 1,000-yard rusher, was a 2 seasons ago.
Right.
I mean, they can just pick it up and go. So I do think all the pieces are there for Georgia. I will say this, though, for not having particularly strong hot takes on the SEC East. Like this past season, Vanderbilt was like my sexy little thing. You know, they're like, I loved the idea of Vanderbilt going out and winning like 8 games, but scoring like 200 points for the season.
Only here on the podcast can you hear Vanderbilt is my sexy little thing.
We're here for it. We're here for Vanderbilt.
We're here.
Everything there.
Yeah.
But the team this year that I'm kind of getting my little fun mom energy about, shout out John Mulaney, is South Carolina. And I was dogging on them last year.
Oh, hell. All right. Keep going. Is it? I mean, I love Beamer, Benz, or Bentley. I love the idea of Muschamp just causing all kinds of problems because it's so much fun. He's got so much energy. It's just he's just a character. I mean, when you go from the tenure at Florida that he had, you know, which had all kinds of weird twists and turns, incredible talent, a Sugar Bowl performance, you know, an SEC championship game showing. No, no, they didn't make it to the SEC championship game. That's why they were in the Sugar Bowl. But then he was at Auburn, and now he's at South Carolina. I mean, at this point, he is like a recurring, like a character actor, right?
Yeah, he. You know what he is? He's like Clint Howard.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, he's kind of there, and you're like, oh,
what's up? This
Clint Howard.
This must be a Ron Howard movie.
This must be a Ron Howard movie.
Right.
This must be the SEC. Will Muschamp's in there.
Yeah. No. Exactly.
But you know what? I'll give him credit because again, I was dogging on South Carolina early because I did not think Spurrier left that program in good shape at all. And he got, what, 6 wins out of him?
Yeah.
6 wins out of him this year. Young. You know, and it's not going to be pretty at all, right?
No.
It's never pretty. But I think he hikes up. I think he hikes up the win total a little bit next year. I think they get to 7 or 8.
Well, Ben, I know Ben likes to get it going in the Ben likes to get it going in the kitchen. You do, don't you?
That's right. I'm a big cook.
Big cook. Well, if you're listening right now, then you probably want to be like Ben. And the good thing is, SEC on CBS podcast listeners have an unbelievable opportunity to get fresh, high-quality ingredients that make a real difference. And listen, it's important. It's important to know where your food comes from, and that's why we are able to give you this awesome deal with Blue Apron. I love Blue Apron. It gives me a great opportunity. I always say it knocks me out of my comfort zone. You know, I would normally stick to my 4 or 5 dishes that I would feel comfortable cooking, but nah, nah, nah. This month, you've got spicy shrimp and Korean rice cakes with cabbage. You've got pork chops and garlic piccata with scallion rice and spinach, mushroom and chipotle pepper enchiladas with lime sour cream. Listen, guys, this is the only way to do. It's affordable. Less than $10 per person per meal. Seasonal recipes, variety. You choose when it comes. It's a great app, a great way for you to plan your meals for the week or for the month. And you can check out this week's menu and get your first 3 meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/SEC. You will love how good it feels, tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't you wait. That's blueapron.com/SEC. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. Got to get it.
I need that because you saw my New Year's Eve photos, right, that I shared with you guys when I tried to cook.
Oh, it was – well, I also
– It was a
Well. Are we talking about the photos of the food or the photos of the flesh meat, the fresh meat that you sliced up?
The fresh – so I ended up cutting my thumb and my finger. I was trying to double dip and, like, watch football and cook, and that was just a bad thing. And then my girlfriend and I ended up, like, just ordering pizza and been like, all right, whatever. But
serving up this.
I just send you all, like, a photo on Slack. Like, here's what is left of my hand, and it's just all in gauze, and there's just blood everywhere.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, Blue Apron, man. I got to get on that.
Yeah. The instructions are good, and the one thing I love is they send you the card with the, like, what it's supposed to look like, all the different steps, and then you keep the card.
Yep.
And so it's just a really good way, again, to sort of expand your palate, expand your skills in the kitchen. It's good stuff. All right, let's keep going with teams that we were talking about. Florida. Where are you at with Florida? Because Florida is one of these teams that really got hit hard. They lost Alex Anzalone, Caleb Brantley, Tease Tabor, Quincy Wilson, David Sharp. I mean, this is a team that I felt like we talk about them being either banged up or thin in one way or the other every single year, and yet they lose more to the NFL draft. Now, what are the expectations for the Gators coming off? Again, we have all these criticisms. We have all these places where they may or may not have fallen short, but yet Florida has back-to-back SEC East championships. You know, what are we thinking going into 2017?
Well, the whole Jim McElwain can't recruit thing is real tough to overcome. And they're not doing great. I'm probably mostly just concerned about the fact that it's year 3 of Jim McElwain, and we're not sure how much better that offense is going to be. And The offensive line, I mean, have they found the depth? Because you're always going to have, you know, at least one or two guys on that offense that can make a play, but they got to be able to have the path to do it. So I'm really concerned about Florida's offensive line. Have they gotten better? Can they replace Tease and Quincy and all those guys on defense? I have a little bit more faith that they can do that, but I think the whole doom and gloom is oversold. I don't think that Florida goes and, you know, has like a Mark Helfrich collapse where they go and they win four games next year. But I think they're just middle of the pack. I think they're 6-6. And they get to a bowl game, but I don't know that they do much more than that.
Is it possible? Is it possible that the SEC East's strength or lack thereof can prop up any team that is just middle of the pack? I mean, because listen, Missouri and Kentucky ain't rising up anytime soon.
I know that they're on any given year. Overall conference strength kind of differs, but like, okay, let me put it this way. Like we talked about the Big Ten. Like my personal opinion was last year the Big Ten was the best conference in college football, just from what I saw. But I also take that with the idea that it was really great at the top, right? Like it was five, however many teams deep at the top,
right?
But the middle and bottom of it was still pretty bad. So I think you find that wherever you go. So is the SEC East still kind of bleh? I was number 10 in, the USA Today division rankings. It was, I think, the lowest Power 5 division last year.
I just think Missouri, Kentucky, and Tennessee, and maybe even South Carolina for Florida, you just like stack up four wins, throw in your non-cons, and you are a perfectly mediocre 8-win team.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think if you're just okay, you're just okay.
Yeah.
To me, that doesn't matter what division or conference you're in. I mean,
you're just fine. They're fine.
You're just okay.
You're
so
fine.
I don't know that. Yeah. Well, I think Missouri's still going to be bad, but but the rest of that division, I think there's going to be a lot of – they are just what they are. And to me, there's outside of, you know, maybe Georgia. I think you had some good points about Georgia. There's about four or five just all right teams.
And it's just going to depend on who's healthier and who wins, like, the turnover battle and little things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. You've talked me out of completely bashing the SEC East. I have a little bit more belief now. All right. Let's take it out to the Pac-12. Washington loses a whole host of important players, guys that have really been key to not just this season, but last season and even before that. Budda Baker, Sidney Jones, Elijah Qualls, John Ross. Where is the Pac-12 North falling? Where is the Pac-12 North breaking, in your opinion, as Oregon gets Royce Freeman back at running back, has Willie Taggart in as its new head coach? Stanford, you know, loses Christian McCaffrey. We know that Bryce Love is there, but they also have a little bit of uncertainty at the quarterback position. They lose Solomon Thomas. You know, where's the Pac-12 North running, in your opinion?
I think Stanford surges back ahead again. To me, this was their – David Shaw has kind of been the same way. Like, he'll go and he'll win 10-11 games, and then they'll have like an 8-5 season. What did they win this year? 9 games?
Yeah,
10 games?
It was a down year. They won 9 games.
Yeah, it was a down year and they won 9 games. And I think we kind of forgot, like they actually played better down the stretch. And I think we sort of forgot because they struggled so much early. We sort of forgot that Stanford was there. And that can be easy to do sometimes with a team, especially if they play out west. But I think Stanford surges again. And Love gave me, and I know it's just one game, and you got to be careful about that because there's a whole bunch of factors that go into bowl performances. But I think Love gave me some optimism that they will be able to. You can't replace Christian McCaffrey, but you can still be productive. And so I think that performance gave me some optimism that they can still be productive. Stanford has been able to win a lot of games without really great quarterback play. I know Kevin Hogan was a lifer for them, and he did a lot of good things for them. But Cleveland Browns starting quarterback, Kevin Hogan, for like a game. But they managed to do a lot without great quarterback play. So I'm less worried about that. I'm probably, as with a lot of teams, I'm most concerned about, like, okay, well, what's their pass rush like? Because Solomon Thomas was underrated good. I mean, we talked about Myles Garrett this year, Derek Barnett this year. We always had sort of these big name rushers out east, and I think people sort of slept on Solomon Thomas a little bit. And so when they saw him in the bowl game, they're like, oh, this guy's good. I think he was really undervalued nationally. That's probably my biggest question mark for them. But I love Stanford moving into next season. I think they have probably the most number of games in that conference outside of USC where you're like, they're going to have the target on their back. So I like Stanford out of the North.
How do you see things shaping up in the ACC? You've got Florida State loses Dalvin Cook, but gets one of the top
Cam Akers, baby.
Cam Akers is going to be so good. DeAndre Francois obviously is going to be a year more improved, a year better. Clemson, you know, it's going to have a phenomenal defense. We'll see what they can piece together on offense. We'll see how good the young talent is able to come and step in right away. I think it will be tough because Clemson ain't sleep like nobody is sleeping on Clemson next year after what they did these last two seasons. You know, Virginia Tech loses a lot. You know, Virginia Tech had a great year one under Justin Fuente, but, you know, pretty much the whole ACC Coastal is losing its quarterbacks except for Duke. So I don't know what's going to happen there. You know, what in terms of as we were going through looking at who's left and who's coming back, what stood out to you about the Atlantic Coast Conference?
I think as a whole, I think the Atlantic Coast Conference takes a step back because of what you just said. They lose a lot of quarterbacks.
Yeah.
And not just losing quarterbacks, draftable quarterbacks.
Brad Kaya, Mitch Trubisky.
Deshaun.
Oh, yeah. That guy.
Yeah, that guy. Deshaun. They lose a lot of draftable. Peterman?
Nathan Peterman's not draftable.
I'm just saying they
lose. Yeah, I got you.
Well, is he your Tom Savage of this year's quarterback?
Nathan Peterman might end up somewhere. Anybody can go get you a job if you land in the right spot. But I think Justin Thomas, the trigger man for Georgia Tech's offense.
He was really athletic and he had a hell of a year. Right. I'm not sure that this was the year for him to come out, but that's a big loss.
No, I think he just graduated. I think he's out of eligibility.
I'm thinking of Evans.
Yeah, no, Evans. Oh, Evans. Sorry. Evans was the one where it was like, huh? Well, okay.
Yeah.
Well,
my bad. I was thinking. Evans.
Go get money, son. Yeah, you know, like those kind of that mixed feeling about it. So I'm looking at probably like a Florida State Louisville showdown. Maybe if you're betting on Lamar, you know, I don't. We had Todd Grantham leave Louisville. I am going into next year agreeing with you. I think that the conference as a whole takes a step back. But in terms of individual predictions and projections within the conference, I'm all shruggy emoji.
I don't expect Lamar Jackson to go and put up the numbers that he put up again this year. It's just hard to do that 2 years in a row. And it's hard to do that and go and win Heisman for a second time. So I think that's going to be a struggle for him, but he's obviously still an incredible playmaker. The one thing I am focused on for Lamar Jackson is, does he continue to develop as a passer? That was the one area from year one to year two. And that's really like the big chip. And this is, I think we're going to see this with DeAndre Francois, Florida State. That's your big jumper year, right? What did you do from year one to year two? And Lamar made a big jump. Can he do it again for a second year? Can he continue to develop as a passer? I think his short intermediate stuff was where he really has to improve the most. So outside of everything else, wins be damned, conference be damned, all that kind of stuff, is can he do that? I'm looking at that for him. But you're right. I think your showdown is Louisville, Florida State. If the Seminoles can protect DeAndre Francois, and I mean that from offensive line, I mean that from running backs. I mean, if your pass protection can just not get him killed, boy, I think they're going to be good because I think they have a good running game. They have a great quarterback who just, man, he can spin it. And I think he has really good ball placement. His decision-making is getting there. His ball placement's great. you're going to get James. You're going to get Derwin James, in case you forgot that he still played for Florida State.
Right.
You're going to get him back on defense. So I really like – I thought Florida State was going to be the under-the-radar pick this year.
Me too.
Again, might have pulled that trigger just a touch early. Next year might be their year.
Woo! He is Ben Kirchival. Thank you so much, man. I really appreciate you taking some time out of this day. It was our inaugural 2017 podcast. So
hashtag inaugural.
Hashtag inauguration. All right, thanks, man. Make sure that you follow him on Twitter at Ben Kirchival, and he will be back with us as we continue to take you through the long, cold, dark offseason. More coming up next week. Make sure that you subscribe on iTunes. Make sure you subscribe on Stitcher. Make sure that you subscribe so that you can get the podcast first. Ben, I appreciate it.
All right, buddy. Talk.